Welcome to the Dermatology Interest Group Association podcast, or DIGA podcast, where we talk about everything from how to become a stellar dermatology applicant to interesting topics in dermatology.
From research advice to interviewing tips, you will be prepared to follow the path to become a world-class dermatologist.
Hello, DIGA listeners. My name is Julia, and I'll be your host today. I'm a fourth-year medical student at University of Illinois at Chicago, currently applying to dermatology, and I'm also a member of the Sun Protection and Melanoma Awareness Committee at DIGA. I'm doing this podcast today to interview a special guest who plays a vital role in melanoma awareness and DIGA volunteer engagement, and we're going to be airing this in preparation for Melanoma Awareness Month in May. Today, I have with me Anne Garst-Taylor. She is the Director of Community Engagement of AIM at Melanoma. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you. Thank you, Julia, for having me.
Of course. So just to give a brief introduction about Anne. So Anne and I have actually worked together on one of the AIM education committees for several months now. So I'm already familiar with her and her wonderful achievements. But to introduce her to all of you, she, as I mentioned, is the Director of Community Engagement at AIM at Melanoma. She has nearly 30 years of volunteer management experience and is a certified volunteer administrator. She believes the world is a better place when people make time to serve their communities. Before she came to AIM, she spent 10 years as the Director of Volunteer Services for a large healthcare system in Charlotte, North Carolina. And prior to that, she worked in volunteer management roles at hospitals, nursing homes, hospice programs, and other nonprofits. So today, we're going to learn more about Anne's involvement with AIM at Melanoma, how we can spread melanoma awareness, especially during Melanoma Awareness Month, and also how us as medical students and DIGA listeners could get involved. So Anne, I'll have you start by, can you just introduce AIM and their mission?
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to do that. It's my pleasure to talk about AIM at Melanoma. For those that don't know our origin story, 20 years ago this month, Val Guild's beautiful daughter, Charlie, was diagnosed with melanoma. She was 25 years old. At that time, the prognosis for melanoma was 9 months, and that's about the length of time that Charlie lived. Part of that journey, one of the things that Charlie made clear to her family is that they needed to bring meaning out of this experience for their family. So after she passed away, Val started AIM at Melanoma. Its mission has always been twofold. One, to find a cure for melanoma in our lifetime so that no other family has to experience a loss of a family member due to melanoma. And that, you know, that's that half of the journey started with Val having conversations with researchers and clinicians across the country, looking for opportunities to collaborate and to communicate with one another. She started the International Melanoma Working Group, which are researchers from all across the world that meet once a year to talk about their research so that everyone is pointed in the same direction. And then the other thing that they did was to decide to start a tissue bank of primary frozen tissue that researchers then could use to create focused treatments for melanoma. You know, that really is the direction that cancer research is going through. After she did that, then she said, in the meantime, while we're looking for a cure, we need to support people who are living with melanoma. And the way that AIM does that is we believe that patients who are well-informed make better treatment decisions. So we started a website that focuses on the kinds of things that people who are diagnosed with melanoma need to know. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, our most frequently visited pages are those on staging, the relevant treatment. We have a section that's on clinical trials for people that don't have any idea what, you know, how clinical trial what the work is that it does, how they can be involved in one, that kind of thing. We started doing symposiums. We collaborate with 10 cancer centers across the country. Most of the people that come to our website are newly diagnosed. And so we want to try to give them the most relevant and up-to-date information on treatment and research. So that education is a big and important part of what we do, trying to help people to make the best choices and hopefully have better outcomes. So that is sort of the story of AIM, why we exist, what we're trying to do in the community.
Excellent. Such an important mission. And I'm actually reminded that the first time I learned about AIM was on the news when I saw they were broadcasting some of the amazing things that they had done, specifically that tissue bank it was. But also the aspect of educating patients is so important. So such an amazing mission that all of you are contributing to. And how did you specifically get involved with AIM?
Well, I found out that there was an opportunity to work for AIM at Melanoma. As you said, at that time I was working for a large hospital organization. And I'd had a family member who had gone through a skin cancer treatment journey. I felt that I wanted to point my professional life in that direction. And so in addition to that, it was my understanding that AIM was looking to expand their volunteer program to try to reach out to the community and get people in the community to join us, to support us primarily with respect to skin safety and education. And so I approached them when a position became available, and I was very fortunate enough to be given the position.
Excellent. And I think that drive and motivation to combine not just your interests and passions, but with something that you have experience with a family member or personal, that's something that a lot of our interests or our listeners will resonate with. So I think that's, something that a lot of us share, but it's great that you're utilizing your best talents and your prior experiences to put towards this mission. So what are some of your favorite program initiatives at AIM and why?
So I would say, getting back to the thing, to what I talked about earlier, my role primarily with the organization is oftentimes to be the first voice or face for AIM at Melanoma with the public. People who, most people, I would include myself in that, are not clinicians. And when they have a new diagnosis, they don't know, what their next steps are. And so they reach out to AIM at Melanoma. And they're looking for, answers to questions, right? What are my next steps? What do I need to be thinking? What do I need to be doing? So I'm most proud probably of our website, the depth and breadth of it. We want our information to be up to date and accurate so that people don't go out and find conflicting information and therefore they're unsure about what it is that they need to do next. So pointing people to things, resources on our website is something that I'm very proud that I'm a part of. As a part of that work, coordinating the symposiums that I talked about, 10 a year across the country. We have a new website called AIM at Skin Cancer, which focuses on basal cell, Merkel, and squamous. And we are now doing 6 symposiums a year with cancer centers. So, the education that is offered to the public through those symposiums. And then in addition to that, we have a podcast called Beyond the Clinic. The host is Ray Liu, who is the director of survivorship for Kaiser Permanente. And in that website, we don't focus on clinical questions or on physical questions. We focus on the emotional toll that having cancer takes on a patient. Anxiety related, in the case of melanoma, related to the son, recurrence, building a support community around them, being able to, handle the side effects and managing all the responsibilities they have in their work or personal life, all those kinds of things. Those are the kinds of things that we talk about on Beyond the Clinic. So I'm very, very proud of that program and being a part of that. And secondly, we have a volunteer program called Peer Connect. It's a one-on-one peer program. We've trained 54 mentors from across the country. These are individuals who've already gone through a melanoma treatment journey. They're on the other side. They're stable. And they certainly understand what it feels like to go through a treatment journey, what it feels like in the beginning to have been diagnosed. And that even though a patient may have a clinical background, though they might be surrounded with family and friends who care about them, yet they don't know what it feels like to have melanoma. And they don't know those little small adjustments that occur every day in someone who is battling cancer. So they're there to offer hope and encouragement and inspiration to normalize the things that they're feeling. They're just absolutely fantastic volunteers. And not only do they go through the training program that I talked about, but they, they attend quarterly in-services so that they, improve their mentorship skills. So I'm very proud that we're a part of that. We have a robust program and we get several requests every month for mentors. We do our best to fill them as quickly as we can.
That's excellent. I did not even know that there was a peer mentoring program. That's such a valuable resource for those that are diagnosed. And I just want to highlight what you said too about survivorship and education opportunities surrounding learning about your stage of melanoma and what treatment's going to look like and how is it going to look like after. That's such a important aspect of cancer treatment. I worked at a cancer center before medical school and just seeing how many areas of a person it could impact their mental health, their physical health, their family's health. It's really important to be paying attention to all of those broader aspects. So it's excellent that melanoma is doing that.
And we have caregiver mentors as well.
We do.
Because, yes, we do. Because, yes, they're part of the decision-making process. Their lives are impacted by, the treatment as well. They're impacted by the side effects that their loved ones have. So, yes, we absolutely have caregivers that have stepped forward and offered some hope and inspiration and advice to the caregivers out there. And then, another thing that not everyone, most of the people that participate in Peer Connect are newly diagnosed patients, but on occasion, we'll have a survivor that steps forward because, fortunately, this is a different time. And 20 years ago, when AMET melanoma was first founded, 9 months was the prognosis. Now we have more and more survivors, but we are having, people are living with the long-term effects of immunotherapy. They're living with the long-term effects of fear of recurrence. And they're living with the long-term effects of getting back to the new normal and what that feels like and how they are forever changed. And so it helps them to talk with other people about how do you walk that new walk? A year ago I was an A and now I'm an B, right? Mm-hmm. And I just want to let me talk to somebody else who's also, that is their life experience, is that they are themselves and they're so glad to have done well in treatment, but also they're a changed person. And I'll tell you something else that they have that might not sound like something that could be traumatic in quotes. They have to let go of their oncology care team and they have to go back to their family practitioner, receive their care there. There's a lot of a kind of feeling of safety that comes from this care team that surrounds you while you are undergoing cancer treatment. And so then going back then to your former care team. And, you know, you feeling like, oh no, you know, I don't have them in my back pocket anymore. So, you know, it's learning how do, you know, what is that, you know, that fine line, how do I let go and go back again? So there's a lot of reasons why a Peer Connect program is a wonderful benefit for the community.
Mm-hmm. Probably so rewarding too, for the survivors to be able to participate. So that's an excellent resource.
They have my admiration, mm-hmm. because they have gone through a cancer journey, and rather than just moving on and moving back into their, you know, plan B, you know, the second half of their lives, they are willing to reach back and pull people through the ring of fire, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. They're amazing people.
Absolutely. And also, not sure if you all heard this, but Beyond the Clinic, another podcast that all of you can look to, it's the Aim at Melanoma podcast. And before we move on from this question, one thing I would love for you to expand on is the symposiums. Are those, I'm guessing, patient-oriented for educational purposes? And did those happen in certain cities, or does it depend on the year?
That's correct. So, yes, we have 10 a year. That we have probably something like 25 cancer centers that like to co-host these symposiums with us. So year to year varies which cities they're in and which, you know, through which cancer centers. Yes, they are patient focused. They are not for clinicians. There are no CMEs attached to them. The purpose for them is to present information in a health literate manner that takes people who are, you know, don't necessarily come from a medical background and help them to understand what causes melanoma, what the treatments look like, what side effects might look like, interventional therapies that they can participate in, what's happening in research in the future, things like that. You know that TIL therapy was recently approved by the FDA. And so mm-hmm. we had a symposium last Saturday, and probably something, I don't know, a quarter of our symposium was dedicated to helping we have events where we have both some participants that are attendees are there in person, and then we have virtual viewership that can view over Zoom and Facebook and the like. And we had a long discussion about TIL therapy, what it is, who's eligible for it, why is it, you know, how does it work, you know, what does it mean for the future of research for melanoma, all those kinds of things. So, you know, those are the questions that the public has for Aim at Melanoma. And so those are the questions that we ask our panelists to cover for us.
Yeah. It's good that you're answering all those questions that they have. And one more thing too. So I know you would actually, this will intro me into my next question. So how you and I met, I essentially saw Aim at Melanoma on the news, thought, wow, I have such an interest in melanoma prevention and treatment, all of my research surrounds, mm-hmm. and I want to get more involved on a volunteer aspect. So I had contacted you, and now we've been working together on this education committee, which has been very fun. So what are some ways that medical students like myself could get involved, specifically our DGA listeners? And on that same topic, is there anything that you're currently working on or exciting new projects that are going to come up that students could help out with?
Okay. So what I want to do is, let's just talk about how AIM has traditionally used volunteers. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I told you that, you know, it starts with seeking a cure for melanoma, and we largely have done that through funding our tissue banks. So we have used members of the community to coordinate walks across the country called Steps Against Melanoma, and then also in some cases people have done small fundraisers for us, you know, trivia nights or square dancing You know, people come to us and say, I'd like to contribute to the effort to, you know, find a cure for melanoma. And, you know, what is some way that I can raise my chili back? So, yes, members of the community, other than the two professional staff people that we have, one working with the walks, our director of walks, and then the other one that works with the what we call do-it-yourself fundraisers. These are all volunteers from all across the country that participate in these small fundraisers for us. So that is a way that people from the community can contribute towards a cure, is funding our tissue banks. Another way that people have stepped forward to help us is this, you know, is our website and making sure that the things that on our website are accurate and up to date. We have volunteers that watch for peer-reviewed articles and will help pass, you know, they get those alerts and they pass them on to us so then we can look at them and see which ones ought to be posted on our website. We have volunteers who have gone in and looked at the clinical trial database that the government puts out and then make sure that we have the most up-to-date information for our clinical trial matching service. So we have people that have done those kinds of administrative duties for us, because you can imagine that keeping a website the size of ours up to date is, you know, is an incredible amount of work. Mm-hmm. We've utilized volunteers for our mentorship program. And then just recently, as you know, we have decided to build on our community, our, you know, skin safety community education program. We have always had rack cards and flyers that we were willing to send to people, things that we created that could be requested by the community. But we want to take that program and put it on steroids. And so that is what, you know, our next step in connecting with the community is to try to grow our presence in the community, get ourselves out there at health fairs and, you know, in schools, you know, on bulletin boards, wherever it is that people naturally walk their, you know, whatever community they're a part of. Would they like to help us get information on skin safety, on prevention into their communities? And so that, yes, that is the wonderful committee that you are a part of, looking at our existing resources. How can we take those resources and create a program, a streamlined program that allows members of the community to come in and say, this is where I, you know, I'm a nurse in a hospital, and I would like to, you know, provide melanoma education at the hospital. Well, then we put together a group of resources that could be sent then to that individual, and then they could do melanoma education. So let's get back to DIGA. How, you know, I think that I'm hoping that that the DIGA membership at the various campuses across the country will be interested in this skin safety education and prevention, and that they will be interested in reaching out to me and letting me know in what way, in, you know, where they are in those campuses, how can we spread this information about best practices, the use of sunscreen, for instance, not using tanning beds, all these things that initiatives that are so important to aim at melanoma. How can we get that information to you so that you can then spread it to your campus? Another way, very quickly, is we do have these walks and we do have symposiums, and we do often need boots on the ground. At the walks, we need people that are willing, that have some knowledge of melanoma and skin safety, to man tables that we have at the walks so that they can talk with the public about those initiatives. And then also at our symposiums, we need volunteers that are help, willing to help wayfind, register patients, and then field, collect questions both online and in person and get those to the moderator so that those questions can be answered live. So we can use DIGA volunteers on those in-person events, and then we certainly can use them as a part of our skin safety education.
Great. So many ways to get involved. And, you know, thinking back to when I think it was at least maybe a year ago, possibly more, when I reached out to you, our first talk, I said, I feel like I have so much, you know, passion and motivation to help out in something in this realm, but I don't know how. And so I think it's really important for listeners to know that there's always a way to get involved, whether it's through one of these mentioned opportunities or something that's going to come up in the pipeline eventually. But I personally have always wanted to help out at one of the walks. So maybe if Chicago gets one at some point, I can definitely help out with that. But it's really great to give motivated medical students and anyone else who wants to get involved opportunities to help out. I know a lot of us feel like, you know, we're not physicians yet, so we can't help out at skin cancer screenings and the opportunities are low, but there's plenty of opportunities to get involved. And speaking from my own experience, it's been really cool to help out on these committees and, you know, examine all these different resources that are out there on the AIM website and interact with, honestly, not all these people at the organization and these committees are also medical students. So you're going to meet people from all different walks of life. And it's a very great experience. And I hope you know that medical students, specifically derm applicants, are very, very motivated people. So if you ever have a task and need help with it, I guarantee you that somebody in our DIGA or beyond association will be able to help you out. So we have a very powerful group of people here.
Well, and I know that you have a calendar that is put out that lists opportunities to volunteer. And we have listed all of our walks and our symposiums on those, the ones for which we need boots on the ground. And so if people see that and see an opportunity in their town, then please sign up because you will be well used.
Yes, absolutely. One of our goals this year on the Sun Protection and Melanoma Awareness Committee is to streamline those connections and make sure that, you know, people know about these events that are occurring and who to contact. So this is just one step along the way to achieving that goal. Great. Moving on. So all these excellent opportunities, amazing events. I know you're making such a difference in many people's lives. How has your role and your volunteer engagement role impacted your own life? And how does that inspire you?
Well, I would say I am a volunteer. Since I was 12 years old, yeah. I have volunteered for one organization or another. I've always been that person. And so I understand what it is to want to do something that makes a difference in your community. I mean, I understand that different people come to volunteering for different reasons. I think generally speaking, what we're trying to do is make our communities better. Mm-hmm. And so that volunteering in my own life, primarily working with people with intellectual disabilities, has informed me and grown me as a person. And so now, as a 30-year, seems impossible it's that long, but a 30-year veteran of volunteer administration, I'm trying to give that gift to other people. When people call me and tell me they want to volunteer, I hear a little bit of myself in that. I hear that need that I have also. I understand they're trying to do a good thing in this world. And so it becomes very important to me to hear what motivates them, what they enjoy doing, and try to find a way that they can do that, or find a way through AIM that they can do that. For instance, with medical students, if there's any way that I can get a medical student face-to-face with a patient, like at a walk or at a symposium, I try to do that because I know what that means to them, that face-to-face, person-to-person interaction, and how we grow when we know more about what other people are experiencing. And as you said earlier, I worked in a hospital for 10 years. I know what the medical students who volunteered for me, how they benefit from having time to spend with patients and hear what their experiences are. So I feel like that it's a great privilege to know people who want to volunteer, who want to make a difference in their community. It's sort of the best job in the whole world. And also I'm a part of that tribe. So when I meet people who want to volunteer for us, I kind of say, yeah, come on into the family reunion. You know, I get why you're here, and we're going to make sure that you have something to do that that touches you and grows you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love what you said about connecting volunteers to positions that you feel like would be most fulfilling for them. That's such a, you know, it's such an extra step that you don't have to take as in your role, but it really makes a difference to the volunteers and definitely to the patients and whoever they're interacting with as well, because everybody is more fulfilled and in a better fit for their role. So it's really great.
Well, I would say that anytime I'm interacting with a member of the community, what's important to me is that they have a positive experience. I want them to leave that volunteer role with AIM and feel like that they really enjoyed volunteering. And so hopefully they'll come back and volunteer for AIM again. But if it's not AIM, they'll volunteer someplace else, that they'll feel like, yes, this is something that I truly enjoy doing, you know, making that connection, right? Mm-hmm. And then frankly, having a relationship with individuals who are one day going to be dermatologists means that they then will be aware of the work that our organization does, and they'll be able to talk with newly diagnosed patients about our organization and get and send them our way so they will receive the support and education that we have to offer. So it's a win for the patient, it's a win for the volunteer, and it's a win for AIM at Melanoma. So everybody wins.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. All these medical students that are interested in dermatology, and we're one day going to be dermatologists. And I'm actually, you know, I'm personally excited for when I, not that I feel like I can't make a difference now, but I'm excited for when I have the credentials and ability to hopefully make more of a difference with my role as a dermatologist. So hopefully this relationship between both us and everyone else that gets involved will be you know, longer than just one event that they volunteer at. All right. Last question for you, and kind of a tricky one. What would a world free of melanoma look like to you?
Well, maybe I wouldn't have a job anymore. Which I think that's okay to say, because I think that's everyone who works at AIM at Melanoma feels like that we are working ourselves out of a job, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, of course, that's kind of a joke, but what is a world without melanoma? It means that we have a world where people don't have to have these experiences that they're having now, these unknown, unexpected experiences. All the things that we just talked about, the change in life experience, you know, the treatments that they have to go through, you know, the mortality that's associated with cancers of every kind. I think that all of us that are working in the field of cancer, and AIM at Melanoma belongs to a number of organizations that are, you know, pan-cancer. We would like to see cancer go away. We would like to see a day when this disease is eradicated, when people don't have to have a fear of cancer, and they don't have to experience the loss that is associated with cancer. So let's hope that with the targeted therapies that are being developed, with the increased survival rates that are, you know, being realized through immunotherapy, and, you know, let's hope that a world without cancer is not far in the future for us.
Mm-hmm. It's a big, lofty goal, but we know that organizations like AIM are absolutely bringing us closer to achieving it. So at least we have great guidance and support in them. Great. So thank you so much for speaking with me. For our listeners who might want to learn more or work or connect with you, where can they find you online or stay updated on AIM at Melanoma's latest endeavors?
Oh, they can go to aimatmelanoma.org. That's where they will find the website as a whole. And, you know, as I said, it's a plethora of information. I invite them to please go and look at it and see all the information that we're providing to the community. If they'd like to reach out to me personally about the opportunity to volunteer, then they can email me at ann@aimatmelanoma.org.
Perfect. So aimatmelanoma.org, everyone. And from DIGA, I know we're going to be broadcasting more of the events and integrating our calendar with the AIM events as well to make sure that you are all informed of that. Cool. Okay. Thank you so much, Anne, for joining us today. It's been truly a pleasure, and I look forward to continuing to work with you on our committee and hopefully getting more DIGA volunteers involved with AIM.
Thank you, Julia. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the DIGA podcast. We hope you enjoyed. Please send us any questions or comments to derminterestpod@gmail.com.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.